109 on WGN. You got it, Elif, hit it.
Mr. Speaker, watching Republicans sell this bill is like what? Is like buying a used car from a guy with a crooked smile.
All right, that's not fair. And there are two sides to this story, and you're going to hear them both on the show this afternoon. John Williams here. We're in the Showcase Studio. I see Allstate to my right and Sunshine to my left, and we're glad we've got you. Here until 3 o'clock on WGN, 75 degrees. It looks every bit of that. I wore a sweater today because it's March, and I just can't get my head when I'm getting dressed around putting on a short-sleeve shirt when it's March. But what a nice day outside. It seems to me like the president wants this health care bill to pass, this health care bill to pass, not because he's a wonk for health care or he even understands all the nuances of it, but he's the president. And his ego is at stake. That's why it seems to me Donald Trump wants the bill to pass. Republicans want the bill to pass because they've said all along that they'll get rid of Obamacare. And even if this isn't a better version of it, they don't want to go back to their districts. And frankly, I think they're a little intimidated by the president. At least that's, to me, of late, felt like one of the dynamics that's at play here. But similarly, it seems to me like Democrats don't want this bill to pass because they are using it as a marker against the president. They're not going to vote for it because it's Donald Trump and Paul Ryan's bill, and they will have nothing to do with those guys. Who knows? Maybe there are better ideas in this. It wouldn't matter to the Democrats because they will not vote for Donald Trump. That's the lay of the land today. I was listening to the debate on the House floor, and it was utterly fascinating. We'll play back a little of that for you in just a little bit. The vote is probably going to come on our show before 3. Just before the show, before we got into the studio, I found Senator Dick Durbin and asked him a couple of questions about this, about the fact that some of the Republicans went over on the Hill to visit with the president, and he tried to persuade them. I wondered if he would handicap that.
Well, I can tell you that the president virtually never loses one of these showdown votes. Before it's all over, they'll give away Yosemite and the Golden Gate Bridge to make sure they have enough votes. And that's part of the presidents of both political parties. So it surprised me when they delayed it. But, you know, the president's the odds-on favorite in this bargaining.
The word is that they don't have enough of those conservative congressmen to switch over. I know they sweetened the pot a little bit, but you think those guys will come around?
I can just tell you, history says that a president never loses. If this president loses, it is a pretty strong indication that he doesn't have the bargaining power for his Republican majority that many people thought he did.
I have to tell you, it's kind of weird to me that something as important as the health care bill for all of the people in this country is seen as a sort of marker for the president's strength. I'd like to think that it would be, you know, voted up or down on its merit and not, are we worried about the president's equity in Congress?
Well, it's because the president and many Republican members of Congress really stuck their necks out. They said our highest priority is to repeal Obamacare. They not only said it, they voted that way in the Republican House over 57 times. The worst part of it, though, is that repealing it is only half of the issue. The other half is what follows. And people now, for weeks, have been asking that question, and they're not happy with what they've heard.
By that, you mean what would happen to Medicaid or the 10 essential items that all policies have to have under Obamacare, that sort of thing?
And 24 million Americans losing their health insurance, according to the Congressional Budget Office. 1 million people in Illinois losing their health insurance with this Republican approach. The increase, $8,000 a year in premiums for people over the age of 50, the reason every major medical group opposes it. You pick the group, hospitals, doctors, they all oppose this Republican replacement.
I understand that. But do you think that premiums are too high for people, that there are flaws in Obamacare that are making insurance unaffordable?
For some, particularly for those in the individual market. We've seen a slowdown in the rate of growth in the group health insurance plan at 60% of people across the country. But the individual group market is the one that has taken a beating. And the reason is you need a risk pool, which means you need healthy people with sick people. Too many healthy people, individuals, are holding back from buying insurance. And so the premiums for those who do buy are going up. That's the tricky part, and yes, we should get together on a bipartisan basis and figure that problem out.
Would it be as simple as simply making the penalty stronger?
Well, worked in Massachusetts, they put a penalty on it that finally brought enough people into the pool that the premiums were reasonable. So that is one approach. Maybe an incentive is another approach. I'm open. The Republicans will take repeal off the table. I'm going to pull up a chair to that table.
What if this House bill passes? Will it pass the Senate? How do you handicap your colleagues?
Four conservative Republican senators have said it's too much government. Four moderate Republican senators have said it's too deep a cut in Medicaid in our states. So it only takes three Republicans to stop them from a majority vote in the Senate. So we have eight that are in play as we go into the debate next week if it passes the House.
If they gut it enough to appease Republicans in the House, that makes the conservatives most happy. But then maybe that would make the more moderate Republican senators a little queasy, because now it will be more expensive for people and it won't offer a lot of the coverage that people want.
That really is the Republican dilemma on this. They have a division within their own party. Of course, those who are in the more moderate position take a look at it and say, you know, we have the lowest rate of uninsured Americans in history. And we know that we're moving in the right direction. Medicare has 10 more years of solvency because of the Affordable Care Act. Can't find good things to keep and bad things to change rather than just simply repealing.
Senator, about those 10 essential items, though, that Obamacare says all insurance companies have to provide, like maternity care, ambulatory care, et cetera, I wonder if that's necessary. What is the federal government doing telling insurance companies, private companies, what they have to include in a policy? Why not let the marketplace and individuals decide how that washes out?
Well, because what we found, people think they're saving money, lowering their premiums and reducing their coverage. And when they reduce that coverage, they're left vulnerable, many times as vulnerable as having no insurance. What then happens? They still get sick. They show up in the hospital. They get treatment. The cost of their care is passed along to everyone else. We're trying to get a basic plan in health insurance protection so we know everyone has some basic protection. You know, when you look at the automobile insurance, that's kind of an accepted standard to say, well, I never drive on an interstate, so I don't want to buy an auto insurance policy that covers traffic on an interstate. Can't you save me some money? Then it gets ridiculous. We've got to have a risk pool, but we also have protection in these policies that's worth buying.
What surprised you the most in the last couple of weeks about life in Washington, D.C., Senator?
John, I will tell you, it's surreal. I've been through a lot of presidents. I've studied a lot of history. I've never seen anything like this in my life. And I don't know where it's going to end. And we've seen things said and done by this president that we've never seen before in history. I don't know how this is going to end, but I tell you, I worry for this country. Not just important needs like health care, but particularly worry about that phone call in the middle of the night when they wake the president and say, sorry, but you have 5 minutes to decide a life or death issue here. I hope he has the right people around him. I hope he'll listen to him. But so far, we've seen statements he's made by tweets, public statements. He's not in touch with reality.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of that Twitter stuff, if I should ignore it or if I should punish him for it because it's incorrect, or if I should find some neutral ground. It's really hard to sort of manage the words that come out of his Twitter account.
Well, if your child was engaged in that sort of communication, you'd certainly have a sit-down with them and remind them that the truth is important and so is your reputation. Here we have the President of the United States, highest elected official perhaps in the world, who's sending out messages at 6:30 in the morning that he was wiretapped, a felony. He was charged against the previous president, for goodness sakes, and it really has damaged his credibility.
Do any of your Republican colleagues in private share that sort of dismay with you?
Yes, but very private. They say, we know you're worried. We're worried, too. We don't know how this ends. But right now, they won't even push forward on the Russian investigation aggressively.
And I feel bad for them. They don't deserve this crap. I mean, you know, I wonder when something is going to tip and they're going to say, no, skip it. We'll take our chances.
John, half dozen of them have done that. John McCain, Lindsey Graham, Susan Collins, and a few others, they've shown some real courage to step up and say, we're loyal Republicans, but this is unacceptable. You know, if more would do that, I think it would have a positive impact on the presidency and on this country.
Last thing, Senator, I know that immigration reform has been your life's work the last 15 years or so. Do you see any headway? Are you optimistic at all about our getting our heads around that?
There's no reason to be optimistic. What we've seen in the first 10 weeks of this presidency has really created serious problems. John, I was in Chicago a couple weeks ago and sat down with some lawyers. They were headed over to a Catholic church in Brighton Park on Saturday, and they had 100 people signed up. They were signed up for free legal services so they could draw up guardianship papers for their kids. One of the parents was undocumented, and they've lived here for long periods of time, but they're scared to death. Done nothing wrong, have no criminal record. That sort of thing should have been taken care of long ago.
Any good books you're reading you want to share with me, Senator? I know you're always reading something pretty good. What's on your nightstand right now?
The Wright Brothers by David McCulloch. Certainly recommend that. It was a great book. David Brooks' book on character, the word character, I believe it is. I just sat down with him. So what are you reading?
I'm reading The Art of Fielding, which is a novel. It's a coming-of-age book for some young men who go away to school and play baseball, and it describes as poetically as you'll ever read the art of fielding. It's not a how-to book. It's about people, but it's kind of written against the backdrop of baseball, and it's a beautiful book.
I'll look for it.
Now, let's talk again, Senator. I'd love to see you in the studio.
I'd like to come by. See you, John.
Senator Dick Durbin on with us just before we got into the on-air studio today. He wasn't able to join us live. We asked Congressman Jim Banks from the 3rd District in Indiana to give us the other side of the coin. He's a Republican member of the House, and you know, he's got some I don't know how he's going to vote. LF, do you know how he's going to vote? Did they tell you what his vote? Is he a yes or a no on this one? Is he going to vote for it or against it?
I haven't been told anything yet. Okay. I'll find out at the same time as you.
Okay. Well, that'll be a little after 2 o'clock, so we'll do that at 2. You know, this back and forth, the way they did the vote on the House, or rather the way they did the debate on the floor of the House, was really interesting. It kind of went like this. The Republicans would go up and say that Trump Care bill is better and Barack Obama's bill, you know, Obamacare was terrible. Bad, bad, bad. So the Republicans would do that. Then the Democrats would come up, and sometimes they would argue the other side. But mostly, and somebody, you know, clever said, here's our strategy. Everybody, this is what we're going to do. They'll go up and say all of the bad things that they want to say about Obamacare. And then all you say, and they all had a script, and they read it verbatim with one number that would change. And it would be like this. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to remind my colleague who just spoke that if he gets rid of Obamacare and passes this Trump version, and then they had how many people in that congressperson's district would lose health care and coverage. And it was some sort of script they'd read. But they'd all, many, many, many of them just said it that way. The debate was interesting strategically because maybe the Democrats, thinking they've got enough votes, they don't need to argue the point anymore. It's not like they're going to persuade anybody. And all of this is just for the cameras and the people at home. The Democrats were content just to singularly hammer home one message, and that was, here's how many people will lose their care. Will it work or not? We'll find out probably in the next hour, live here on WGN.